Grande. Taco. Grande.
Yo quiero Jimmy Jungles y Chili Carrero. Yo tengo el dinero para un steak de caro. La salsa y tamales siempre muy bueno. Y el chili relleno. You see, I just gotta have a tostada, carne asada. That's right, I want the whole enchilada. My only addiction has to do with a flour tortilla. I need a quesadilla. I love to stuff my face with tacos al carbón. With my friends, but when I'm all alone. Yo tengo mucho hambre y ahora lo quiero. Un burrito ranchero. So give me something spicy and hot now. Break out the menu, what you got now? Who would you tell the waiter I'd like to have sour cream on the side? You better make sure the beans are refried.
Taco. Grande. Taco. Grande.
Well, there's not a taco big enough for a man like me. That's why I order two or three. Let me give you a tip to try a nacho chip. It's really good with bean dip. I eat uno, dos, tres, cuatro burritos. Pretty soon I can't fit in my speedos. Well, I hope they feed us lots of chicken fajitas and a piece of margarita. Well, the combination plates all come with beans and rice. The taquitos here are very nice. Now I'm down on my knees. We need some extra tomatoes and cheese. And could you make that separate check, please?
Taco. Grande.
Señores, bienvenidos a El Rico Casa de Salsa. Tenemos muchos platos muy sabrosos que puedo recomendar el ardiente pollo al infierno, muy delicioso. Tus ojos se quemarán, tu estómago estará en fuego, te quedarán en el baño por una semana. ¿Entiendes lo que digo, gringo estúpido tonto?
Well, the food is coming, I can hardly wait. Now watch your finger, careful hot plate. What you think you're doing with my chili con queso? Well, if you want some, just say so. Boy, pico de gallo. They sure don't make it like this in Ohio. No gracias, yo quiero jalapenos. Nada más, you can toss away the hot sauce. ¿Dónde están los nachos? Holy frijoli. You better get me a bowl of guacamole. ¿Y usted, Eugene? Why's your face turning green? Don't you like a pinto bean? You want some more cinnamon crispas? If you don't, hasta la vista. Just take the rest home in a doggy bag if you wanna. You can finish it mañana. Well, it's been a pleasure. I can't eat no more. Señor La Cuenta, por favor, if you ain't ever tried real Mexican cooking, well, you oughta. Just don't drink the water.
Taco. Grande. Taco. Grande.
Insurgent Radio Network calling. Insurgent Radio Network calling. This is Terrible Tommy, Tom Metzger, right here in the bunker. Right here in the bunker, and it is Freya's Day. How about that? And this is the third day of January 2014. How about that? Yeah. Well, I thought I'd lead off there since it's Friday, and we're snowed in with a little reminder of Southern California. And that was Weird Al Yankovic with his Southern California National Anthem. Well, at least the Southern California Anthem. Yeah. Thought you'd enjoy that. Yeah, we don't charge extra for that kind of stuff. Well, let's kick off with a little file from my favorite race-mixing progressive, Malloy. But before you get too excited, he has a beautiful white wife and a nice beautiful little white child, little girl. So anyhow, he's not race mixing that much. Anyhow, we'll leave that go for now, but I do want to get this across to some of the people who have said, well, those guys never attack the Jews, Malloy never does that, no, none of these guys on the left ever attack the Jews and really go after them. Well, let's listen to this, see what you think. But remember, when you attack the Israelis, you are attacking the Jews and you're put into the ranks of the anti-Semites. Whether you like it or not, and if you've got a string of stations that your show is on and do that, you're risking annihilation. It's a little different with me on the internet, but Malloy does serve a number of stations, and he's lost quite a few because of his positions. So anyhow, let's do it and see what happens here.
Today, veteranstoday.com, 9/11, one of the great murder mysteries of all time. Notice they obviously call it a murder mystery. Anyway, the question that they raised, why would AIPAC, the American-Israeli Public Affairs Committee, and one of the most powerful lobbying organizations, if not the most powerful, other than the National Rifle Association, in America? The many leaks bandied about in the mainstream media all point to the Saudis as the culprits who attacked America on 9/11. That's according to the Joint Congressional Report's redacted pages. Yet Israel's lobbying Congress to cover this up. Now, I'm not quite sure what Veterans Today means. I think we all understand. I guess they mean that the government was behind the 15 of the 19 bombers that came to this country being Saudis. That the I guess what the Veterans Today is saying, that those Saudis were sponsored by the Saudi Arabian government. Anyway, are the leaks blaming the Saudis, or is it a misdirection ploy? Veterans Today wants to know. Could it be that the so-called one or more foreign intelligence agencies involved in the planning and execution of 9/11 included the Israeli Mossad? He goes on to say, look at where the, quote, blame the Saudis, end quote, leaks are coming from. Paul Sperry, author of the New York Post article on the Lynch and Jones request, those are the two members of Congress, works for the Hoover Institute, an Israeli-affiliated neocon think tank. The Post itself is one of New York's several Israeli propaganda outfits that poses newspapers. Now, keep in mind that the Post is owned by Rupert Murdoch. How it could be Israeli propaganda outlet, I'm not sure, but let me go on. Sperry, the writer, claims that, quote, unnamed CIA sources, close quote, told him the redacted pages of the joint report implicate the Saudis. Do those so-called CIA sources really think the Saudis have the covert ops capacity, the political clout, and the motive to attack the United States and get away with it? Or is the newspaper reporter Sperry and his real or imaginary sources doing what the Hoover Institute and the New York Post always do, fronting for Israel? Dr. Alan Sobrowski, the former director of studies of the Strategic Studies Institute of the U.S. Army War College, says that only the Israeli Mossad has the capability of to coordinate the 9/11 attacks. Even more obvious is that only Israel had a motive. Of all the countries that might have wanted to stage a spectacular attack on the United States, Sobrowski says, quote, Israel is the only one that had a positive incentive. They had something to gain from it, from the American response to it. Whereas for everyone else, they could hurt us, but they might themselves be the subject of retribution afterwards, and there's nothing positive coming out of it, end quote. Orchestrating a huge terror attack blamed on Israel's Arab and Muslim enemies makes perfect strategic sense for Israel, and absolutely no sense for any other country on earth. Of course, the article goes on, we know that the Saudis and Israelis have many common interests. They even have a history of false flag terror collaboration, as we learned when Prince Bandar Bush's Saudi intelligence front, al-Nusra, set off chemical weapons in al-Ghouta. And then Israel mobilized all its assets to try to force the U.S. to bomb Syria. They're saying that those chemical attacks were engineered by the Saudis also. Whatever the ultimate truth of 9/11 may be, the article goes on, one thing is clear. if the redacted pages of the 2002 Joint Congressional Investigation really do show that one or more foreign intelligence agencies planned and executed the attacks of September 11, 2001, ex-President Bush is guilty of obstruction of justice and maybe high treason or worse. There could be no innocent national security reason for hiding the identities of the 9/11 attackers from the world. By lobbying Congress to bury the issue, AIPAC also appears to be committing obstruction of justice. If Congress continues to refuse to act on the request by Representatives Lynch and Jones to pass a resolution demanding the declassification of the full Joint Congressional Report, it too, Congress, will be committing obstruction of justice. All right, so from Veterans Today, now this is not a new idea, of course. The so-called dancing Israelis that were watching in the white van from the New Jersey shore, watching the trade towers go down, when they did go down on September 11th, that has been talked about. They're just so much about this. Don't you agree? I mean, what a hell of a time to bring this up, right? Here we are doing the immediate post-Christmas show. It's a nice cold evening in the foothills of the North Georgia Mountains. I'm sure it is where you are, too. A pleasant time to be sitting in front of a fire, perhaps, enjoying a glass of wine or something else. But no, we're talking about 9/11 conspiracies and talking about someone who is implicating the Israelis and the Saudis as co-conspirators. Do you think that's a possibility? Why, of course it is. Of course it's a possibility. Always has been. The one thing, who was it that said after the attack, we're all Israelis now? The one thing the Israelis had to gain from the attack was a commitment from the United States to act militarily and to act viciously in a military way somewhere in the Middle East. And since Israel declares that everybody in the Middle East is their enemy, unless we attacked Israel, Israel would benefit from whomever we attacked. Does that make sense? Of course it does. And of course, the Bush family has never been great sympathizers of Israel. George W. Bush and George Herbert Walker Bush were both kind of irritated by everything the Israelis did. Now, why, I don't know. Maybe it is something in the Bush character that says, you know, we're tired of the Israelis continuing to manipulate the United States. If anyone's going to manipulate the United States, it's going to be us, the Bush crime family. You know, maybe that's it. Who knows? But I think it's safe to say, and I can make this declaration and be very comfortable with it intellectually, that George W. Bush and Dick Cheney were both involved in their eyeballs, up to their eyeballs, with knowledge, foreknowledge of this event, and did nothing to protect the United States. If they were not active participants, they were passive participants in an act of mass murder on U.S. soil. I think the clearest proof, if that's the right word, or perhaps a better word would be indication of that, would be the fact that Cheney did not allow Bush to testify alone before the 9/11 Commission for fear that Bush, being the half-witted moron that he was, might spill the beans. So Cheney had to go with him. Remember that? Neither of them agreed. And, of course, Cheney not agreeing to testify on his own. It was just a cover. Cheney could look the Christian God in the face and lie through his ass. He could look at Jesus, Gandhi, Martin Luther King, and Mandela all at once and lie. Cheney is a liar. Cheney is a goddamn monster. But Bush, on the other hand, Bush, the stupid little George W. Bush, they couldn't allow him to go before the 9/11 Commission. So When Cheney said, well, we'll both testify together, what he was really saying is, I've got to go along to make sure this little twit next to me here, this fake president, doesn't spill the beans. And then, of course, the fact, and to me this is the kicker, that they insisted, or Cheney insisted, that they both testify not under oath. Now, what does that tell you? I mean, Clinton testified under oath about his sexual dalliance with whoever, with Monica Lewinsky. But Bush and Cheney demand, or Cheney demands, that they not testify under oath in the greatest act of mass murder on U.S. soil since the War of 1812? Why? Well, I think the answer is about as obvious as it could be. And as far as drawing conclusions, sure, of course I'm drawing conclusions. But the conclusions that I'm drawing, for me, are very comfortable intellectually. These two sons of bitches and everybody connected with them have a clear understanding of what happened. As far as Israeli and Saudi involvement, well, why not let's have a real investigation, not a cover-up?
Well, what do you think? I mean, would you rather hear that or Alex Jones? And now this person has a string of radio stations around the country, not a lot of them, but he risks a lot coming out like that and saying the things he does. Not only that, but about the Christian religion and radical environmentalism and talks revolution and so forth. So anyhow, he has quite a bit to lose, and sometimes you wonder whether any of us have much to gain, you know? Well, our naughty North Korean boy that did away with his uncle because he was corrupt, he said, and he probably was, has got himself in another little propaganda jam. Forget the hangman's noose, the firing squad, or lethal injection. North Korean leader Kim Jong-un executed his uncle and a handful of the man's aides by feeding them to a horde of 120 starving dogs, according to a shocking account. Well, this may be true and it may not be true. Jang Song-thaek, the former number two official in the secretive regime, was stripped naked and tossed into a cage along with his five closest aides. Then 120 hounds, starved for 3 days, were allowed to prey on them until they were completely eaten up. This is called Kwanju, or execution by dogs, according to the Straits Times newspaper in Singapore. The Daily relied on a description of the execution in a Hong Kong newspaper that serves as the official mouthpiece of China's government. Well, I thought we weren't supposed to believe those red Chinese. Well, it would have been quick. Not quick enough, probably, but not a real merciful death. But aren't there some people in this country that if you were to tell the truth, now look in the mirror, that you might be capable of doing that too? I know, that's a good question. You take it from there. You don't have to answer me either. I think the main thing to be gained from that is that letting everybody else know that if you pulled the same kind of crap, you're going to get it too, and there has to be something involved with punishment for a crime against the people in this country that convinces people that it's not a good thing to do. And the same way in a black community, like I say, you know, I'm not just picking on the blacks, but they do commit a lot of horrible crimes against whites. And so it's obvious that what should be done, and it probably will be done one day, is to make real, real examples out of these people that do this stuff. And don't let them hustle them off to prison before it gets accomplished. That's my opinion. Otherwise, it'll never, ever stop. Now, from another point of view, we've got Kim Jong-un's recent executed uncle, Jang Song-taek, was probably not planning a coup to overthrow Kim's rule over North Korea, as Pyongyang charged. Instead, Jang was more likely purged after attempting to take a larger role in the state-run mineral exports business, according to the South Korea intelligence chief. I think they've got sources of rare earth over there that I think it's North Korea that you can't get anywhere else in the world, and that is a mineral that's needed in manufacturing. Until recently, Jang was second most powerful person in North Korea. He married Kim Jong's ill sister, the aunt of the country's current leader, but Jang was publicly purged and executed in early December. The state media provided a massive list of Jang's crimes as justification. Those included the accusation that he brought together undesirable forces in the country to form an opposition faction against Kim, that the report said made him a traitor. Okay, let's see. But South Korean intelligence chief Nam Jae-jun thinks Jang and his associates started to seize more power over the country's mineral export industries. Okay. But I think someplace in the press it said that they didn't quite think that that 120 dog story was quite kosher. I don't know. Well, I see that Kevin Strom, defrocked propagandist for National Alliance, has been picked up and recreated under the new National Alliance, and is the show American Dissident Voices, which was Dr. Pierce's show, will now be put out by Kevin Strom and the new faction. So I'm not going to get involved in their internal workings, even though I know quite a bit about it. I see the anti-Glebe faction now is building a new headquarters somewhere, and so I expect this controversy to go on for quite some time, with both factions using a tremendous amount of Dr. Pierce's speeches, radio shows, and so forth to keep moving. I question whether they'll... I don't think the country can handle two factions of American dissident voices and so forth, the National Alliance myself. And I don't think... I think it's going to be somewhat of a waste of time to start recruiting members. However, that's their business, and they're going to do it, and I'm going to do what I do. So, I don't know about how all that arrest of Kevin Strom and the trial and all that kind of stuff turned out. I guess his wife said a lot of nasty things about him and so forth and so on. I don't know. But I will say this. It seems interesting that whenever a child molester or a child molestation charge is made in the right wing, that if the person is part of the clique, people come out of the woodwork from everywhere to support them. Whereas if that happened to a left-wing Democrat, the same right wing would be up in arms. Hang them high. So, of course, when these charges are made among the right-wing racial people, of course, they're always innocent. You know, no matter what the evidence is, they're always innocent. So, anyhow, that's all I've got to say about that. Well, I did make one comment on it. I said two factions using much the same source material Whether the new faction likes it or not, Strom will be dragged through the mud on his molestation charges. That's never going to leave him. But maybe Strom's situation will be much like David Duke's situation. Duke has a certain amount of Teflon clothing that he, the charges against him always seem to slide off. Maybe Strom will be the same way. I know one thing, you got to keep your nose clean about things like that, because the Jews know all about it, even if nobody else does, and at the proper time and moment when it's most convenient for them and beneficial for the Jews to use the information, they will come out big time with it. Well, according to Israeli press, Sharon from Israel, the hardliner, is on his way out. Of course, he's been in a coma now for 2 or 3 years, at least. But now it seems his internal organs are coming apart. So we may finally see the end of Sharon. Well, the right wing is certainly interesting in France. I'm going to lift a paragraph out of here, a long paragraph about the Jews in France. And yet that appears to be what the president of the CRIF, Roger Kuckerman, is doing at a private luncheon with a handful of journalists 1 week before the anniversary celebration of this organization. Zugerman, a banker, outlined a new look for the organization. Now, this organization was pro-Jew, and it started back in 43. Anyhow, which he previously headed for 2 terms starting in 2001 during the 6-year hiatus between the end of his last term in 2007 and his re-election this past spring. He said the CRF has come to be seen, quote, an annex of the Israeli embassy, an association of right-wing fascists notorious for their unconditional support of the Israeli government, unquote. That image, he went on, does not correspond to reality. Well, in other words, a lot of the right-wing, and I've heard this before, are supporting Israelis and the Jews in France and wanting to fight the Arabs that have moved into France. And during the 60s, there was thousands, tens of thousands of North African Jews moved into France. And so, and now tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of Islamics have moved into France. So you can see what's going to happen there. No love lost. They seem to be getting very, very excited over this new alleged neo-Nazi salute. Instead of the Roman salute, it's across, diagonally across your body. But I've seen Negroes using that same salute, so I don't see how that's going to be very effective as a coming together of whites. You know, one more point on that North Korean situation and Kim Jong-bong-dong. Don't you remember back in the 80s when Clinton was chumming up to that guy, and when he was causing us to ship hundreds of thousands and millions of gallons of kerosene to North Korea, and at the same time, I think he was setting him up with these nukes, if I'm not mistaken. I do remember for sure the kerosene shipments to try to buy him off. Here's a little bit of what the Jews in Israel think of Mr. Kerry, our Secretary of State, right? Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu, Mr. Nitwit, gave visiting U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry a stark welcome Thursday evening by pointing out to him how the Palestinian Authority incites terror with its celebrations this week after Israel's freed more terrorists who murdered Jews. Kerry ignored the comments and spoke of my, quote, my friend BB, and said, it's such a great pleasure to be back in Kiktim, Israel. He spoke of the sunset on the old city and how it reminded him of history. But he did not say what history, the Temple Mounts or the Al-Aqsa Mosque. One of his most amazingly naive and stupid comments. This is what the Israeli press are saying about our illustrious, stupid Secretary of State. Quote, after 5 months, I think it's safe to say we know what the issues are, unquote. And he calls himself Secretary of State? If he had read the newspaper 65 years ago or even 10 years ago, he would have known what the issues are. Netanyahu repeated for the 5,935th time that he would never surrender Israel's security. Okay, let's see. And Kerry paralleled his comments, saying that really knows what is good for Israel's security. Saying that really knows what is good for Israel's security. They don't have very good proofreaders over there. The Secretary of State also said he is encouraged that an agreement can be made between the Palestinian Authority and Israel and can be reached because he saw a recent poll that shows most people want to a two-state solution. Does anyone else have any other straws to give Kerry to grab at? That's what the Jews say about Kerry's recent visit, you know. This goes on and on and on and on. It seems like it'll never end. Never. Until Israel is destroyed demographically. Here's a few comments on that particular meeting by Jews in Israel. Why does he even talk to Kerry? Kerry's an idiot now and has always been an idiot. A hero in his own mind. Next statement. Don't know about straws to grab at. It seems as if the scarecrow in the Wizard of Oz has a lot more brains than Kerry, who is most probably dangerously and destructively clueless. Next one. Why would you insult the scarecrow by comparing him to Kerry? Next one. Comment. Send Kerry back to Obama. And Kerry would say to Obama, it was not a good idea, Mr. President, to send me to Israel to talk about borders. Next one. Barack Hussein is on vacation. He does not want to be disturbed. Next one. Why do you give a damn? Give him that much credit. Next one. I would not want to be Kerry. I guess he thinks, oh, here we go, God won't punish him for what he's doing. Woe unto him. Next one. Can't someone tell him we're not interested in his help? Well, you're interested even though he is an idiot, married to the ketchup queen that was so powerful that they was able to keep that chemical in the ketchup all these years, about 75 or 80 years, that's dangerous for you to eat. But anyhow, they sure want the money, don't they? They want that donation. And go get them, Islamics. Go get them. Well, some people keep sending me this stuff about how wonderful Putin is. And it's very enticing, but then I get figures that cause me to question that a little bit. These are rough figures, so let me try to wade through it here. This is Putin in figures and facts. All figures are taken from official statements to the media, the public officials, authorized operating experts. Okay. Under Putin of Russia in figures 2012, Russia for the last 20 years. Over the past 3 years, 3.5 million migrants were legalized into Russia. Ramadanovsky Konstantin, 3.5 million immigrants brought to the treasury of Russia 16 million rubles, which is about 5 rubles per person. In January to April 2013 in Tajikistan, mostly from Russia, received almost 850 million Tajiks. In 2012, migrants sent to Tajikistan, 3.5 billion. At least 11 million migrants in the territory of the Russian Federation. In 2013, entered Russia 44 million people. Head of the Federal Migration Service, Konstantin Rodomensky, says. In Russia, 3.6 million illegal aliens, head of the Federal Migration Service, said. 3.3 million migrant workers moved to Moscow in 2013, Dmitry Kozak, deputy chairman of the government of the Russian Federation. Don't sound to me too much like Putin's putting his foot down on this non-white immigration. Russia is the second country in the world, the number of living on its territory migrants. This English is a little funny here. Population division of the UN Department of Economic and Social Affairs. A minimum of 20% of the residents of the Moscow region are immigrants. 20%. Acting governor of the Moscow region, Andrei Voropov. Okay. Every fifth inhabitant of Moscow is a migrant, evidently. 50% in the capital of unsolved crimes are committed by outsiders. If these do not interest at all in Moscow, would be the most minimal level of crime in Russia. Anatoly Yakunin, head of the main Department of Internal Affairs. This is a little disjointed because it's not straight English. But better than my Russian would be. In Moscow, 60% increase in the number of crimes committed by migrants. Okay. The number of crimes committed in Moscow residents of the neighboring countries has increased by 42%. In this case, as much as 72% increase in the number of serious and very serious crimes. And in organized groups, citizens of these countries have to commit crimes to 5.5 times more often, according to the Moscow police. According to statistics, investigators for 2013, every fourth murder, rape, and every second kidnapping in St. Petersburg, the handiwork of migrants. In the three districts of the Moscow region for the last year revealed less than 40% of the crimes. Investigative committee has identified 21 regions of Russia where the growing crime exists. Drivers, workers convicted in every fifth violation in Moscow. 14% of workers suffer from dangerous infectious diseases, specialist TB and other diseases. The government increases the annual quota for free higher education for foreign nationals 1.5 times. Where is this great nationalist Putin everybody keeps telling me about? He doesn't sound any better than Obama. Introduced new educational standards in accordance with which in 2015 will require teachers to teach all these skilled migrants. The population of Moscow planned to increase by a third by immigrants. During the years of Putin's rule, actually according to the calculations of the Caucasian Knot correspondent from 2000 to December 30, 2013, on the territory of Russia was committed 81 terrorist acts involving a total of 123 bombers. Mosque, heart of Chechnya, became a symbol of Russia. Ministry of Internal Affairs admitted that it does not record crimes against children. Last year, victims of violent crime were recognized more than 89,000 minors. Criminal number of deaths among children has increased over the past 3 years from 1.6 thousand to 2.1 thousand. Vladimir Putin signed a law on ratification of the agreement on temporary employment of Vietnamese citizens in Russia. Putin signed a law on ratification of the agreement with Mongolia on labor migration. Putin supported the abolition of visas to Georgia. Introduction of visa regime with the countries of Uzbekistan and Turkestan and Kazakhstan may reduce drug trafficking 30. I don't get that, but Vladimir Putin openly opposed the introduction of a visa regime with the countries of Central Asia and the Caucasus. The introduction of a visa regime without the CIS will mean that we will alienate the former republics of the Soviet Union, unquote. That's what he said. Foreigners can vote in any local elections and can serve as observers, may nominate their candidates, including key positions like mayor or chairman of city council. Boy, some nationalist as Putin is. Sounds just like over here. The government has decided to attract more than 1.6 million foreign workers in Russia in 2014 and adopt the appropriate quota. And you know most of them are not going to be Aryan. All foreigners are entitled to conduct his career without a work permit. Boy, the illegal aliens would love that over here. In Russia, a quarter of the young people up to 25 years, the number of unemployed. 37% of Russians feel humiliated, while in Moscow and St. Petersburg, this figure reaches 46% of the traditional Russians are pissed off. Oh, the great Putin, a very real threat to the country, believed the Russian colonization of other nationalities, quite likely such as an outcome, is considered 35% of the citizens of, can't interpret that, can't read it. 74% of the population are immigrants negatively. Only 1% of the Muscovites' positive attitude to the inhabitants of the Caucasus. Economy and corruption. Outflows from Russia to offshore over the past 20 years range from $800 billion to $1 trillion, said chairman of the Federation. In the year of not less than $88 billion dirty money derived from Russia, thus taking the RF2 ranked outflow of financial resources. In less than a year, the police had made 3,500 crimes, 2,000 of them of corruption. A new record of Putin's rule, the external debt amounted to $719.6 billion. Russia's foreign debt has grown for 9 months by 13% to $83.2 billion, informs the Bank of Russia. The volume of the Russian market of corruption is $300 billion a year. Of them, 90% of the funds falls on areas related to public sector and budget allocations. Today, Russia controls defense spending, is no better than Tanzania or Uganda. New corruption rating, Transparency International. November 29th, ruble fell to its lowest since the mid-2009 level. The government has approved a plan of uncontrolled access for foreign companies in the country's strategic enterprises. There you go. As the head of the Federal Anti-Monopoly Service, Igor Artemyev, it is including the domestic mineral deposits. And it's selling off Russia. The capitalist is in total control of the whole world, boys and girls. You have one enemy, really. One major enemy, which feeds the profits of the ruling class. Putin will try to take control over private banks. Since 2014, delegates CBR will operate at 162 banks, 26 subjects of Russia, deputy chairman of the Bank of Russia. Moscow joined the top 10 most expensive retail space. 40% of the violators of traffic rules in Moscow have license plate special series, in other words, bureaucrats. Putin raised the limit age of officials to 70 years. Since 2013, premiums of individual entrepreneurs in the pension fund increased twice. In the end, only the first 3 months of 2013 closed more than 200,000 IPIE 7%. Food imports increased by 5.9% from 5.8 billion to 16.8 billion. In other words, they're not growing as much of their own food as they used to. Gross profit agricultural organizations decreased 21.8% to 46.4 billion rubles. The amount of losses jumped by 2.1 times to 24.4 billion rubles, despite the fact that the share of unprofitable enterprises in agriculture have risen from 23.6% to 26.7%. At the same time, for the first 7 months of 2013, rose pasta 12%, sunflower oil by 7.8%, fruits and vegetables by 12.8%, and bread and bakery products rose in price by as much as 15.7%, updating their maximum mark 5 years ago. It is on acquisition costs uncontrollably rising in price and steadily declining as food accounts for over 50% of the expenditures of the household budget of poor citizens. Where the money goes, personal status, Russian President Vladimir Putin is about $130 billion. For comparison, the state of the world's richest, Carlos Slim Liu and Bill Gates, is estimated at $53.5 billion in 2013 and $53 billion respectively. Putin is richer than both of them. I told you, never trust a KGB man any more than you would an FBI man or a CIA man. The Sunday Times in Moscow: 84 billionaires with a total fortune of $366 billion. New York is still second place. Live in the city, 62 billionaires that live in the city, with a total state of $280 billion, according to Forbes. The number of billionaires in Russia by February 2013 has grown to 131. Rating richest Russians, well, they have a whole list of them here, and I can't pronounce their names. The number of dollar millionaires in Russia, estimated 84,000 people. By 2018, the bank predicts growth in the number of dollar millionaires in Russia up 133,000 people. The World Cup in 2018 in Russia will cost 660 million rubles. The Olympics costing the country at least 18 billion, and taking into account the non-performing loans from the state of 51 billion. This is the most expensive Olympics in history. 80% of the budget the party United Russia receives from the federal treasury. Total on improving the image of Putin's Russia in 2013 will be spent $1 billion, including of these funds to the government of 500 hired Goldman and Sachs to improve Russia's image. Here we go. The Jew boys are up to their neck in this thing. earlier, this need to spend even more money. They spent 45 billion rubles to improve Putin's image. Think God has just called me on my intercom. Sorry about that. Putin has decided to take $15 billion from the citizens of the Russian Federation and the Ukraine to give, in addition to 1.5-fold reduced gas prices for potential voters. Yeah. Well, that's interesting. Buying votes, huh? Russian authorities are ready to invest in the development of the North Caucasus tourism cluster to 60 billion rubles. The pro-Kremlin youth and Zakhaputsky patriots received 300 million rubles presidential grants. The forum Seliger 2014 decided to spend 240 million rubles. Wow. Well, I'm going to skip down here a little bit. I don't want to bore the hell out of you, but I know you are. The social sector. Every third citizen of the Russian Federation is not enough money to buy clothes and shoes, and only 21% of the people in the country can afford to buy home appliances, and every third expresses a lack of money to buy clothes, shoes, and 9% did not have enough money even for food. More than half of the citizens, 59%, say that in the last year of their incomes did not grow, and prices in contrast grew. 27% believe that income growth does not compensate for a stronger rise in prices. Every third citizen of the Russian Federation is burdened with outstanding loans. Ah, Shylock's back. Mortgage could afford only 3% in need of housing. In other words, only 3% of the people could get a mortgage. More than 30% of the citizens said they did not plan their expenses more than a month. Only 14% are not financial, but generally at least some plans for life for several years ahead. The average cost of one square meter of housing in Russia today than average wages in the country in two or more times. In other words, space to live in costs two or more times what the average wage is. The Russian electricity exports to China twice cheaper than the Russians are paying for it. Oh, that good old white racist Putin. Come into the amendment to the law on education. If lead expert calculations, it turns out if we just leave without any preferences for enforcement of the law, it may happen that the fee will increase to 5 times for education. How to get to the subway from 1 January in Moscow costs 40 rubles. Moscow took first place in international ranking of congestion. At year average, Muscovites spend in traffic jams 127 hours or 5 days. Sounds like L.A. In Russia, in 2013, compared with 2012, in 2.5-fold increase in the numbers of accidents and violations in the field of housing and energy. Well, anyhow, it goes on and on. I don't know whether I sent these to you before or not, but this is raw data, and of course I apologize for not being able to read it the way they meant it. I think I'll just go ahead and send it to you anyhow, even though I might have sent it before. But this is the thing. No leader in the entire world can be trusted by its own people. Now, I hope you get that through your heads, you conservatives out there and so forth. No people can trust their own government. Never could, never will, or never shouldn't. So when they send me this glowing shit about Putin and then tell me Well, he came out of the KGB, and I said, you know, that, wait a minute, boys. Don't give me that crap. They're all alike. Every one of these leaders is a criminal. And most of them are war criminals. And most of them have committed most of their crimes against their own people. And if you believe that and put it in your brain and act upon it, you won't go too far wrong. But if you're taken down the primrose path by maybe one thing Putin does, say, oh, look, see? Oh, why? He's all for the Russians. The white Russians. Yeah. Well, if you're swayed like they do here with Madison Avenue and Hollywood, then you're always going to be a victim. You'll be a serf. An ideological and a mental serf, which is even worse than being a physical serf. Well, in closing, I want to say something about the recent death of Bob Grant, the WABC conservative right-wing type of talk show guy from New York City, who obviously we didn't agree on everything, but Bob Grant was a very interesting guy and a feisty guy, and he'd go to war with them, much better than Rush Gumball and all these people. I'd lost track of him. I know he got kicked off the air at least once. In fact, way back in the 80s, he called me, and he was coming to the Fallbrook area to a wedding of his daughter, and he wanted to meet with me. And for some reason, and I don't remember now what happened, but that meeting never took place. Anyhow, Bob Grant is dead, and I think he was a very well-meaning conservative right-winger. And of course, most of what he would like to have said is he couldn't say without being kicked off. Now, this Mike Malloy says a hell of a lot more. Goes a hell of a ways farther out than Bob Grant and a lot of these other people did, but and he's still going. So I wouldn't give Malloy too much, in the sense that I don't think he's going to last, either physically, mentally, or his show. I think they're going to probably get him off the air one of these days. So anyhow, that's it for now. I'll be back tomorrow on Saturn's Day, and it's temperatures rising. We've got sun now, full sun, and but since it's only about 20-25 degrees, I don't think there's going to be much melting going on. 14.5.
For all the mamas in the house, here's one called Mama Tried, and you know what that means. Yeah, we all understand that. All right.
First thing I remember knowing was a lonesome whistle blowing and the youngin's dream of growing up to ride on a freight train leaving town, not knowing where I'm bound. No one could change my mind, but Mama tried. The one and only rebel child, the family meek and mild. My mama seemed to know what lay in store. But all my Sunday learning, toward the bad I kept on turning, till Mama couldn't hold me anymore. And I turned 21 in prison, doing life without parole. One could steer me right, but Mama tried, Mama tried, Mama tried to raise me better. But her beating I denied, that lays on and be to blame, was Mama tried, yeah. She tried so very hard to fill his shoes, working hours without rest,
wanted me to have the best. She tried to raise me right, but I refused. I turned 21 in prison doing life without parole. No one could steer me right, but Mama tried, Mama tried, Mama tried to make me better. Pleading I denied, that leaves only me to blame. Yes, Mama tried, yeah. God bless her
out especially for all those